Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, folks, we're back. It's Biscuits Calling a Hockey Podcast. I'm Dave. Dave Lozo of Earth. And you know the Ottawa guy, the Ottawa office, where apparently you're making plans to do a live show for one person with a case of beer on his porch. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. The Ottawa headquarters of the Vice Empire, where, yeah, apparently we're doing a live podcast in which somebody's just going to go bring a case of beer, leave it on my porch, ring the doorbell, and leave.
Oh, they're just going to leave. I thought you were going to go on the porch.
Well, that's what I was looking for. I don't know if they may not be... They may have had different things in mind, but yeah.
Oh, that's good. How's the off season treating you at this point? Are you pumped? I know we said we'll talk about the Leafs later, but I mean, might as well just run it out of the way real quick. Are you excited? Kyle Dubas is he your guy?
Yeah.
You have no choice, I guess.
Yeah. No, he's. I mean, we knew he was going to be the guy. Now it's a question of what the fallout is and who stays and who goes. And I think everybody assumes Lou Lamoriello is going to go probably to the Islanders. But the question is Mark Hunter, does he go? The fact that he was not at the press conference, that he hasn't really been heard from since Friday, there hasn't been any sort of reassuring. Like, I mean, even Lou kind of went in front of the microphones and said, oh yeah, no, I'm going to stick around. Even if it's not true, he made the point of doing that. And I don't believe we've heard anything similar from Mark Hunter. So that suggests that he is potentially on the way out. And then now it's a question of who do you bring in to replace them? And how do you rebuild this front office? There was talk of Ron Francis potentially being a guy that they would want to bring in, which seems a little curious to me, but I guess there's a relationship there with Kyle Dubas that he may want to continue. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, I'm certainly, like, I feel this is one of those stories that comes up every now and then where I feel like everyone is marshalling on one side or the other and, like, feeling very strongly already. And I'm just kind of in the middle, not feeling sort of left out and not sure where I stand, because you've got all the old school guys who can't handle the fact that somebody young who hasn't been around for 20 years
nerd
is
with
yeah
his glasses
is, you know, right yeah it you know because he's a computer guy, even though he's like literally been in rinks for like his life.
He's an adult with like a wife and kid too, isn't he? He's like he's like a fully formed person.
He is, exactly. He's you know, and he's like, in any other world he would be considered like the old school hockey guy who's constantly at the rink, constantly watching hockey, but because he's young enough that he probably knows how Instagram works, he's like some punk millennial. So you've got that, which is clearly stupid, but then there's also, you know, I think a portion of Leaf fans who are ready to already like anoint this guy the next Theo Epstein or the next guy who's going to just come in and just progressively remake this organization. And it's, he's got a hard job ahead of him. Like it really is. It's been said before, but it's true. Like the Leafs have made tremendous progress, but they've done the easy part. Now, you know, getting from terrible to good is tough, but getting from good to great is where the real challenge is. And he's got a long way to go, and we'll see. He's never been a GM at the NHL level. I don't know why I should have strong opinions about whether he'll be good at it or not. He's earned his shot, let's see how it goes. But he's got a team with a lot of strong personalities, including Mike Babcock, that he's got to deal with, and we'll see how he manages it.
The two things that I've enjoyed are the fact that 6 hours, 5 hours after that press conference, he said something along the lines of, the defense here, it's not really that bad, or something along those lines. And people were like, oh, no, what have we done? Oh, no. God, no, it's the one thing. Why does he like the D? No.
As if he would as if he's going to go out there and be like, our defense is terrible. And I really have to trade for a defenseman. And I'm really going to be under the gun to get that deal done. And I'm probably going to have to give up a fortune. I hope none of these.
He's like tugging his collar, like, "Woo, this is going to be hard. I don't know how I'm going to do it." And the whole Kiprios thing, where Nick Kiprios seems to be like what Darren Dreger was for Dave Nonis back in the day, where everyone's reporting the same thing, like, "Hey, it's going to be Kyle Dubas. He's going to be the GM. Hey, people like Kyle Dubas, blah, 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 blah." And Nick Kiprios is like, apparently Kyle Dubas is too afraid to ride the elevator by himself, so he needs Lou to be there the whole time. Just sources tell me, and it's like, come on, dude, what are you doing?
Nick? Let me just say one thing on Nick Kiprios. He did get, I don't know, he got a bad rap because he wrote a piece that said that there were sources around the NHL who were not convinced Kyle Dubas was getting the job and thought that Mark Hunter was still in the running or even the favorite to get the job. And that's what he wrote. He said there are sources who aren't convinced this is a sure thing. And as sometimes happens in this business, that piece went up with a headline that was much more definitive and basically made it sound like Nick was reporting that Mark Hunter was going to get the job. So that then when Kyle Dubas got it, people were throwing it back at him like, yeah, nice scoop. And, he's like, maybe read the article that I wrote instead of just the headline. But we know that that's not how things work.
Look, I'm just happy if anybody clicks on my stuff. If you don't read it, it's fine. Just click on it. Just give me the click. That's all I'm looking for.
Speaking of your stuff, this was overwhelmingly the question I got hit with the most over the weekend and in the lead up to this week's show. Mm-hmm. How can I phrase this? Because I don't want to say, are you?
I forgot what I wrote already last week. I don't even know what you're going to ask.
Are you going to attempt to get back onto the Washington Capitals bandwagon?
No.
Will you be applying for reinstatement?
I can't
now
do
that
it.
You abandoned the Capitals and they are stomping a mud hole in the Tampa Bay Lightning?
See, here's the thing is that I don't waver on my beliefs just because a team goes down 2-0. Except when the Caps did to Columbus, I wavered a little bit, but that's different. This is that was the past. This is now. And I really think Tampa's not screwed, but I kind of think they are screwed in a way because so here's my
that's
overall
a good take.
Thought. Yeah, like they're like I'm so not ready to, because actually I was talking with my editors on Sunday night. They were like, "What do you want to write about?" And I was like, "I kind of want to focus on what Tampa's doing wrong because blah 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 whatever I wrote." And they were like, "You sure you don't want to write about Ovechkin? You know he's about to get his chance to play for the Cup." And I was like, "Let's hang on a second here. Let's not necessarily put him in the Cup final just yet. I'm not quite ready to do that." Blah blah blah. So my feeling is that Tampa's not in trouble because I still think Tampa's way better, and now Nick Backstrom's still not going to come back because they don't need him. They're up 2-0, so they're still going to play that depleted Caps lineup that I still don't think is that good. But the thing that has me worried is the way I thought the Caps could win the series was by having Braden Holtby just play out of his mind, and they've won two games where, like, literally you or I could have been in net. It wouldn't have mattered. Like, Braden Holtby was just kind of there, and they just ran them over at 5-on-5, so that concerns me, but I just still think Tampa's good enough to win 4 out of 5. I'm not ready to pump the brakes and cut off the bandwagon and like at gunpoint throw the bus driver off and get on the bus again. I'm not ready yet.
All right. So the answer is that no, we will not have to go through the process of denying your application to get back on the bandwagon. Yeah. I mean, you know what? I'm largely with you on that. I think I almost feel like, and I'm kind of alone on this, maybe, like Washington was clearly the better team in the first two games, but I didn't feel like the gap was as big as some people are making it out to be. I mean, like, there are people who are saying, like, I mean, they just have absolutely dominated and destroyed the line. Yeah, I mean, first game was 4-2. Second game was a close game right up until the last minute of the second period, and then obviously the Lightning were chasing it the whole third. It's weird because this is the sort of scenario where in any other series we'd say, well, game three is the crucial one. If you lose two at home, if you go and you can win that third game on the road, now it's 2-1, you got some momentum, you got a shot to go out and even the series, but you need that third game, and that's true tonight. But at the same time, there's like also that part of you that kind of wants to see Washington go up 3-0, given all the history and everything. And, you know, Washington's the only fan base that after everything they've been through, if they went up 3-0 in a series, they'd kind of be like, wait a second. I don't know if, hold on. It'd be like that moment in the horror movie where you're
what
like,
what is this? Yeah.
Okay. The killer's dead and buried, but like we're only an hour and 15 minutes in. It doesn't feel like we're ready for the credits to roll yet. And yeah, part of me hopes Washington wins, goes up 3-0, and then like Holtby gets beat from center ice 20 seconds into game four. And you just get shots of like thousands of Capitals fans just leaving, just streaming out of the arena. Like,
that's
nope.
It. It's over.
Nope. Not this time, hockey gods. Like, so that was a long way to say I'm with you. If Tampa wins this game tonight, I think we've still got a series, and I don't buy that it's, you know, that this is some sort of done deal by any stretch, because Tampa's a real good team, and you know they didn't really show it in the first two games, which means they've got another level that they can hopefully get to and soon, because they'll need to.
The thing that I can't get past from game two, the thing that really would bug me as a Tampa fan, is you John Cooper basically used the Braden Point line against all of the elite competition he faced the first two rounds. The Taylor Hall line, the Patrice Bergeron line, and in the second round, the Patrice Bergeron line absolutely pooped all over the Braden Point line, and John Cooper said, nope, going right back to these guys. Stuck with them, they won the series in five. And it just seemed like after the Caps scored 30 seconds in the game too, like John Cooper threw up his hands and was like, you know what I need? I got to get Braden Point off the ice, and I got to get Cedric Paquette, Ryan Callahan, and Chris Kunitz out there way more often. And I understand that based on shot metrics, I forget what it ended up as, but I think it was like they controlled like 66% of the shots. So like two of every three shifts, essentially, they were hemming the Ovechkin line into the zone. That was the line they wanted to play against. But if you put three guys on the ice who in 12 games, and I think Kunitz has played 10, but in 2.5 rounds now, these guys have not scored a goal against the goalie. Ryan Callahan has one empty net goal, and it wasn't even a good empty net goal. There was like 1.2 seconds left when he scored. Like, he didn't have to score that goal to win the game. It was over. They have basically no goals in three rounds. So if you put these guys on the ice, like maybe they play the Ovechkin line to a draw, but you're also putting them on the ice more than Palat, you're taking shifts away from Tyler Johnson and Braden Point and all these guys. And I just feel like he overthought it. I think he just thought, hey, there's no Nick Backstrom. Let me play the Ovechkin line to a draw and let these other three lines, you know, do their thing against Devontae Smith-Pelly and all those guys. But you have way better players than the Caps do at this point from top to bottom. Just throw your best players over the board as often as possible. Don't worry about, like, put Stamkos and Kucherov out there against Ovechkin and make Ovechkin play defense. Like, why would you put your worst, your most unskilled players on the ice two more minutes in game two than you did in game one? And that's the part that I just don't get. I just felt like John Cooper kind of got outcoached in game two. It makes me mad.
Yeah, it's not a bad take. And John Cooper's been like a weird situation because he's had so much success in Tampa, and yet,
right,
it always feels like there's like a certain segment of that fan base that is kind of like, I mean, I think one of the questions that we got to the reader mailbag was like, you know, if the Lightning lose, does John Cooper get fired? And it's like, what? I mean,
but that's every
just led
fan
them
base.
To the best record. Is it?
I feel like every fan base wants their coach fired. Like,
I don't think this is a fan base thing. I think it's a John Cooper thing. Like, I think there's just certain, you know, something about him where when things are good, they love the guy. But there's always that kind of, you know, he had there were talk that he wasn't getting along with Stamkos and this,
yeah,
and that. So yeah, I don't know. It's I'm not saying he gets fired. I think that would be pretty ridiculous, but yeah. It's he's one of those guys where it kind of swings wildly from best coach in the league to potentially not helping as much as he could be.
It doesn't help when you keep giving up goals in the final seconds of periods for stupid reasons. Like that Vasilevsky, I understand if you're a Lightning fan, you're like, oh, Vasilevsky didn't trip him. Burakovsky felt, no, he stuck his leg out. He knew what he was doing there. He was trying to set a little pick and he got too far into it. And then he scored on himself. Like that was the whole game. That's why, like, I agree with you that the games have been closer than they've seemed, but if you're Tampa and you're constantly doing things the Caps would do the past 2 years and you keep choking, or not choking, choking's the wrong word, but you keep having these like brain cramps, you're not going to win. And I don't know, the whole Cedric Paquette thing just drove me insane. It was just so weird. I'm watching game two and I keep looking up and I keep seeing Ryan Callahan on the ice, and it's like, is Pierre Maguire coaching this team? Why is Ryan Callahan getting all these shifts? Chris Kunitz, oh, here's the highlight package. Yeah, you don't get NBC, man, down here for whatever reason during the intermission periods. It's either Eddie Olczyk or Jeremy Roenick. They love to highlight like the 17th best player on the team and like show his shifts. Like it was Scott Hartnell last round for the Preds, and now it's Ryan Callahan and Chris Kunitz for Tampa. And it's just like, I get it. These guys block shots and they hustle and stuff, but they stink. They shouldn't be playing as much as they are. There's a reason why they're the fourth line. And I get John Cooper has to play four lines. So how much of that is Steve Yzerman's fault where, you know, these other teams can actually roll out 12 players that can actually do some stuff, and he only has 9, and he's still playing the fourth line thing drives me. They're probably going to make lineup changes tonight, so this is all pointless that I'm yelling about this, but I just don't get the whole idea of a, you know, quote, checking line in 2018. Drives me nuts, man.
The other thing in this series that happened that was interesting, and even though it didn't end up determining the outcome of a game. Game two, TJ Oshie gets called for high-staking Victor Hedman. 2 minutes, Lightning score on the power play. Looked like it was going to be an important goal. Ended up, like I say, not really mattering in the big picture. But it was a pretty standard call, except for the small detail that Oshie's stick didn't actually touch Victor Hedman. It was the puck. And you can understand in real time how it kind of looked otherwise, because the stick was kind of up there in the area.
Sure.
But
if only there was a way to fix that, Sean. If only there was a way.
If only there was a way to fix that. So, because I don't know what you guys got, but in the Canadian broadcast during the intermission, they had actually a pretty heated debate over whether there should be some form of replay review or some way that these sorts of plays could be managed. And they showed an example from March where the same sort of thing had happened to Roman Polak of the Leafs, and he'd been given a penalty, and then the officials apparently saw the replay on the scoreboard and rescinded the penalty, which is something that nobody really knew they were allowed to do, but maybe they should, because at the end of the day,
yep. You
just want to get the call right. So, I mean, what are your feelings on this before I tell you what the right answer is?
Clearly, high sticking is a thing that should be reviewed if you want to review it, because it's not a penalty where it's subjective. If a stick hits you in the face, the visor, the neck, the throat, that should be 2 minutes. And if it doesn't, you shouldn't get called for a penalty. And as opposed to interference and offside, where you got to kind of check the microscopic lens of the tip of the blade next to the blue line, and is that ice or snow, or is that, what is that? I can't tell what that is. Is that the parallax offside angle? Like, it's just a stick hitting a face. So yeah, you could just look up at the scoreboard. Did that stick hit his face? No. You can look at the eye tablet dealy. It did hit him in the face. That's 2 minutes. It's a simple, easy, quick review. And I know that you people, Canadians will say, no, it's not really Canadians. It's not really old people. I don't know why you fall into the anti-review thing, because people are just like, oh, that's what we need is more reviews. We all agree referees are terrible. We need these safety nets for referees, and you don't want to have a penalty like the one that happened in game two cost you the game. So why not just, you know, hey, skate over. Be like, hey, that hit his face. Like, no, it's okay. Look at baseball. Baseball's been doing review for what, like 2 years now, 3 years? it's so much better now than it was when it first started. You have to give it time to sort of get, you know, streamlined and so it moves quicker. Like now reviews in baseball don't take 7 minutes. Like they're pretty quick. And hockey, I think they've gotten a little bit better with the interference here since they let Colin Campbell and his old referee friend watch replays. You need a little safety net for the high stick, Sean. So tell me why you hate technology and cause me incorrect, and why you love the human element.
Here's the thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I occasionally complain about the NHL.
What?
I occasionally,
yeah, I guess
look
so.
At things that the NHL is doing and either shake my head or more likely, either say or write about what a bunch of maroons these guys are and how they're doing things wrong. But I gotta say, there are times where I take a step back and I look at hockey fans and the hockey world and I go, maybe they get the league that they deserve. And this is one of those times. Because if you can honestly sit through the last 2 years of NHL hockey and everything we've gone through with offside reviews and everything we've gone through with interference reviews, and you can see a play like that and you instantly, your reaction is, I know what we need. More review. More review will solve this. More review will go smoothly and it will be a good thing and we'll all like it. If you honestly, after the last 2 years, if that's your reaction, you probably deserve more review, and you deserve the version that we would get from this league, because we have been down this. What, like, the play that we saw there, that TJ Oshie, Victor Hedman, that is the Matt Duchene offside of high-sticking controversy. Yes, it's obvious. Yes, it's the sort of play where you go, surely we can just review that. That's what we all thought when Matt Duchene.
But it happened last round too. It's not really the Matt Duchene thing. It happened with the Bruins and the Lightning, where there was a double minor call that shouldn't have been a high sticking penalty. It happened a lot.
Does it happen a lot?
A lot.
Or does it happen
a lot's too strong
a few
here.
Times a year? Which is, you don't need replay review for plays that happen a few times a year. And let me just say here, because I know anyone who's followed me for a long time is probably thinking it. Okay, I'm all in on complaining about a missed high stick call. I have been complaining about one missed high stick call for 25 years now.
Here we go.
Most of my life, I have spent complaining about a missed high stick call. So if I'm sitting here saying we don't need replay review for high sticking calls, you know, nobody should be at calling for this. Because here's the thing. You know, again, like any kind of, well, we should have replay. Okay, what does replay look like? How does it work? Is it a challenge? Do we have... You know, is it something that the league instigates? Is it something, you know, you look at that play. Yeah, that play was obvious. Again, that's the Matt Duchene play. What if the camera angle is a little bit different? What if it's not obvious? What if you're looking at the replay and you're going, I don't think the stick got him? Maybe it did. From that one angle, it kind of looks like it did, but from the other angle, it doesn't. I'm not really sure. Now what do we do? You know, what do we do when, you know, you've got the angle, except, oh, player skates by and our view's kind of blocked and, oh, geez, we're not really sure. You know, what do you do then?
Don't challenge it. That's all.
So I mean, because I'll tell you right now, if we're going to make it a coach's challenge, the number one rule of coach's challenge that we've learned is you give a coach a challenge, you think they won't use it very often, they will use it often. I guarantee if you've got coach's challenge, I know everyone says, oh, it's high sticking, it's black and white. You wait. What happens when there's a goal scored and coach goes, hey, no, actually, I'm challenging 30 seconds before. When that guy threw a body check, he kind of had his stick up against his body, and we think the stick brushed against the other guy's visor. That's high sticking. Take the goal off the board.
Okay, how about this? How about you can only review it when it's whistled as high sticking? If it's a high sticking penalty that doesn't exist, then you can overturn it. How about that?
Which seems to be what people are suggesting. So you can do review to take away a high stick, but you can't do it to add one.
Right.
Which, again, that to me makes more sense, but okay.
But...
So what happens now when we see that same play, obviously, except it's the other way, okay? Victor Hedman goes down, oh, I got hit with a stick. The official comes in and waves it off. No, it was the puck. And you look at a replay, and it's TJ Oshie hitting him over the head with his stick. And you go, oh, the referee clearly blew that. I promise you, if we've got replay review going the other way, somebody's going to say, well, why wouldn't we do it both ways? This doesn't make any sense. Surely we need more review. You open the door... And then, yeah, what happens when it's a slash? Slashing's, you know, that slashing's not that subjective.
At,
what happens
you,
if it's...
Look at you, slippery you slope in this argument.
Down,
come on.
Sometimes the slippery slope
come on.
Is true. There really are such things as slippery slopes. And as soon as... We went down it with interference. It was a stupid thing. Interference should have never been a review because it's a subjective play. High sticking, I realize people think it's black and white. It's not. Every single time that a player gets his stick over the shoulder and makes contact is not a penalty. I'm sorry, it doesn't get called that way. If you want it called every single time, as soon as you do replay review, the problem is, as soon as you say we're doing replay review because we want to get it right, you have to get it right every single time.
That's not because, true.
And,
you,
and
you,
if
want,
you,
you
don't,
want to, but you don't have
people
to.
Complain.
You have to try. You have to try, Sean. We have to try to be better.
We've been
as a
trying
society,
with offside
as a league.
And everybody hates it. We've been trying with goalie interference and everybody hated it for 2 years. Why would this be different? Why would this same system with the same people running it somehow yield a different result where this doesn't get used often? It doesn't turn into, there's no unintended consequences. There's no unexpected results. It works great. Why would you possibly think that doing the same thing for a third time would yield a different result than the disaster we've had the first two times we did it?
Here's what your argument sounds like to me with the whole, have you seen how bad we are at offside and interference? You really want to do a third thing? It reminds me when, like, I was a kid and I didn't want to do something. You know, your mom was like, you know, do this, do that. And like, yeah, go outside and rake the leaves. And you go outside and you just, I don't know how to rake the leaves. This rake is weird. Am I holding it upside down? Like, I don't know how to get the leaves in the back. And eventually they're just like, fine, I'll do it. I don't want you messing it up. Like, that seems to be how you're trying to get out of the interference thing by being like, look how bad they are at interference and
I'm offsides. Saying, look how bad they are at the other two things.
Yeah, but it's only been 2 years, though. It's only been 2 years. Like, it could get better. Just because it's not perfect yet doesn't mean... Plus this is
okay,
the,
well,
in the
when
NHL
it gets
too.
Better and we all feel like they've nailed it, then we can talk about adding new things. But... If they've done it twice and it's broken twice, let's not add a third thing until you fix the first two. That
it's
seems
not,
like
it's
a reasonable.
Not broken. It's not perfect, but it's better. It's
not
what
broken.
About the Marc-Andre Fleury
like
interference
3 months
game?
Talking about goalie interference every single week on this podcast and how it wasn't working. You can't turn around now and go, it was actually pretty good. We can add a new one.
I mean, it works sometimes. It doesn't look at the Marc-Andre Fleury thing in game one, right? That was game one where the puck. It was clearly not interference. The contact with the goalie didn't matter. They waved it off, looked at it, and were like, oh, my bad, that's a goal. That was the right call. So it works sometimes, for sure.
Sometimes. Yeah, it works sometimes. But if that's your argument for using it on a play like that Victor Hedman play that, again, happens a few times a season, you know, the fact that they had to reach back to March to find an example to use, you know, with the Roman Polak thing, is pretty good indication that this isn't happening very often.
March is like a month and a half ago. That's not that far.
Yeah.
And plus it's Toronto. So that's the one they remember up there in Toronto when they're looking for a highlight. I'm sure it's happened.
You know what? When we're sitting here a year from now, watching 5 minutes of frame by frame to try to figure out whether a stick brushed up against somebody or it didn't. And we're all sitting around going, what the hell were we thinking? Why did we add another replay? Just because of one obvious missed call, which, by the way, there's four officials on the ice. They all have the ability to overrule that call. I mean, at some point, again, I say this as somebody who has not shut up about one missed high stick for 25 years. So I get it. I get where people are coming from. But at some point, mistakes happen.
Okay.
And I don't think it adds
element.
To the game. It's this is I'm not saying human element it adds to the game.
No.
But mistakes happen. What you can't review everything. We can't stop the game every few minutes to go frame by frame to make sure it's perfect.
But no one's
sometimes
saying review everything. They're just saying
freak plays happen, mistakes happen. It's some well, what's the argument for not reviewing, you know, where is the line then? Where what do we not review? If this is okay, if they you know, like
see,
what are we not reviewing?
You're slippery sloping, you're straw man, and you're all over the place.
There's no straw man here. It's the slippery slope, yeah. Because
no, your straw man is we can't review everything. No one's saying to review everything. We're saying to review a high stick.
Nobody is saying review everything. Everybody's saying, you know, review this, but we won't review everything. Okay, where's the line? Where do we stop?
Right here, high sticking. That's it. Nothing else.
And that's it. So the next time...
No slashing, no hooking.
So next game when there's a too many men on the ice penalty and then we see on the replay, actually, the guy did get to the bench in time. We're not gonna decide to start reviewing those?
Well, you could. You actually could if You could.
And if, the next time there's a tripping call and we see the guy stepped on the puck, we're not going to review those?
What you could do with too many men is, what's the distance? It's like 5 feet you got to be within. Some, whatever the number is, you can put like a little halo around the bench. And if the dude isn't inside that halo on the replay, then you can.
And if there's a call where there's a team gets scored on because they got called for icing, but then we actually find out, they weren't close, we're not going to review those. I mean, that's black and white in the rule book. If there's a goal on an offensive faceoff and we look at the replay and, that guy had his skate over the line, we're going to review those now? I mean, where do we stop on this reviewing every little thing that happens in a fast game that is being officiated by four guys who have got to make calls in real time? Where do we stop? If it's high sticking, you give me a signed agreement that I give you high sticking reviews and we never talk about this again, I'm all in, but we know that's not going to happen. There's always going to be a next thing we can review.
I can like picture us doing this podcast in like 1985 and somebody was like, should we review goals? And you'd be like, goals?
Of course. Goals, there was never argument about goals other than how do you get the technology to work. There was never an argument. And there was never a situation where people felt like, that we didn't have 2 years of reviewing goals and getting calls wrong and getting calls that still weren't clear. And
we still do get calls that aren't clear on goals.
And then the ruling stands and people understand that. Reviewing for goals works. I'm not anti-replay in general. There are certain things that it works for. But we've expanded it and we do it the same way every time. We wait till there's one incident that is clear and obvious and we go, well, that can't happen. So let's review everything.
Everything.
To make sure doesn't happen, we end up using the review on dozens and dozens and dozens of other calls that nobody ever wanted reviewed, but once you introduce it, that's how it gets used.
Like, offside reviews have gotten better since they changed the punishment for getting it wrong. Now, not every single tiny, it still comes down to that sometimes, but they figured that out. Interference, I feel like the last couple months, I don't know. I haven't really seen too many interference reviews where they made a call and I was like, what? I don't understand everything. I feel like they're getting better with that. And
Great. When they get to the point, yeah, then give it more time and don't add anything else to the pile until you feel like we've got this nailed down and we've learned something and we know how to do this in a way that we're not going to be sitting there going, there's only going to be like five plays a year that get reviewed for this high sticking rule. And then suddenly there's five in the first week and we're all looking around going, oh, what did we do? We did it again. I can't believe we fell for this again.
Hey, you know what a really good thing about review is? Horn of Doom. We had a Horn of Doom last week.
We did. I love the Horn of Doom.
The Horn of Doom was fantastic. And I remember
there was a play last night and we'll get to Winnipeg Vegas after, but there was a play last night where, after when they scored the second goal and then they got the breakaway right away off the faceoff. And there was this, it sort of sounded different and you're like, you had that moment where you're like, are we going to get Horn of Doom? And you're like watching them skate around, like, just like, no. And then after about 20 seconds, you're like, nah, okay.
Like, I really hate how in the San Jose game they didn't know what it was right away. They're like, oh, the horn blew. Oh, that's interesting. Like, oh, it's a goal. That's what that means. It's like, you should be like, the Vegas.
This has happened enough that people need to understand what's going on. I mean, it was fun in the old days where you could just keep playing for 3 minutes and then find out that none of that mattered. But short of that, I do enjoy the fact that it's got to be fun to be an NHL referee. Well, you make a mistake at your job, they blow a horn, and then you have to announce in front of 20,000 people what you got wrong.
It's fun. It's good stuff.
It's beautiful.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the series between Vegas and Canada's Vegas, Winnipeg. And since Winnipeg has a chance to be the first Canadian team in the Stanley Cup Finals since Vancouver, we will get to what the Sedins did that year and their effect on that city of Vancouver and what they meant there. So we'll come back with all that in about 2.4-somethings. All right, be right back. Bye.
Mm-hmm. normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, we reviewed the first half of the show, and after review, it turned out that I was correct about everything, and Sean.
People
was
should know
wrong.
We continued to argue during the break.
Yeah, really quickly, we're not going to continue to do this, but like the fact that the NHL is so intense about how a puck is dropped, like get that stick, you're out of here, buddy. One more of those, and it's going to be a 2-minute minor. But yet, the idea of like making sure a guy wasn't incorrectly called for high sticking is like, hey, hang on, let's not get crazy. But
isn't it weird that all of these centers are cheating constantly on the faceoffs to the point that they constantly need to be reprimanded and they constantly need to be thrown out, and yet none of them ever cheat the second time?
I know.
That would draw the 2-minute penalty.
Interesting, isn't it?
It's so. I guess the rule works. I guess everyone, they cheat like maniacs right up until they get the first warning. Mm-hmm. And then there are good little boys who do the face-off properly.
It's like a game 6 or a game 7, how it's just weird how no one takes a penalty the last 40 minutes of a game. Yeah. I don't know how that
happens. My favorite part of the face-off is like when the first guy gets warned, so now the linesman is watching the second guy so closely that his opponent just comes like 3 feet over the line and just like catches the puck in his hand and takes off, and the linesman's like, oh, sorry, turns out I can only watch one person at a time, so.
It's a freebie for that guy because he can't get. And then the whole like, there was a faceoff last night, I think, where like the dudes in the faceoff circle like fell, and the linesman like didn't move. He didn't get out of the way. He just stood there and looked to see if anyone touched it with their glove. Like, man, the faceoff rules are so intense, and yet everything
what
else
we need. Hear me out. Every linesman wears a little GoPro on their head, and every faceoff we stop and review it. And everybody crowds around. They can pull out their iPhone. Everybody watches the footage and decides what they did right and what they did wrong.
Man,
it'll be great.
You're so cynical.
Great. Oh, I think man, you're, I think I you're this, love I, it when people stand around and look at a screen. That's what I tune into hockey to see.
I just figured it out. The reason why you're this way is because you got screwed by the high stick, and now you want everyone else to feel your pain. You're like that's your villain origin story. Is the Carey Fraser high stick? Wow,
it's possible.
Thought about that. Oh, this Winnipeg series, man. I got to tell you, I'm getting a little sick of you Canadian people. I'm just gonna say it. I'm tired about hearing how loud your building is, and then I constantly have like people texting me and DMing me going like, that building's not as loud as Nashville's building. Why is everybody trying to make that building sound so loud?
It wasn't that loud last night. I can tell you,
well,
like from experience. But even when the game was, well, I mean, I guess it was 2-0, but yeah, the first night was loud. Second night, like last night, was noticeably not as loud. Like, I will tell you, when they made the playoffs the first time, so 2014 or 2015, I actually went to Winnipeg for the first game.
Oh yeah.
And I was planning to write basically that piece, because I'm like, I'm sick and tired of every arena gets called the loudest building just because it's the playoffs. And it's like, oh, they're loud. Yeah, you're supposed to be loud. It's the playoffs. Of course you're supposed to be loud. And I went there and I was ready to write the piece where I was like, you know what, it's a nice atmosphere, it's good, but it's not all that loud. That place was loud as crap. Like my ears hurt for like a day afterwards. So I'm assuming it's been the same this year's playoffs. I haven't been out there, but I gotta say, you know, last night maybe accepted because they were losing. That building really, really does get loud.
But like, it's also, I don't really care that it's loud, because like you said, it's the playoffs, every building is loud. That's my favorite like thing, when I check Twitter at like 7:15 and it's like, oh my god, it's so loud in here. Yeah, it's the game is about to start. That's what happens before every playoff game,
and especially when it's like a market that isn't typically considered, like, you know, like I remember years ago, like Carolina would make the playoffs, they'd be like, oh, hockey's back in Carolina, man, this crowd is great. It's like, yeah, it's the playoffs, they had 8,000 people a few months ago. Like, you can't, like, yeah, it's, this is how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and the fact that like they're attributing the wins to the crowd, like, oh man,
yeah,
the crowd's really energizing them, really, because they lost 2 of 3 at home to Nashville. So I don't know how now they're 1-1 against Vegas. I don't really
they
think
really,
it matters.
They really seem to throw off Marc-Andre Fleury with their goalie chanting.
That was the best.
Which, by the way, I wrote on Friday about the goalie taunt chant and how people weren't doing it right. And I think I got more response to that than just about anything I've written all year, like in terms of positive response. I had people emailing me like, thank you for saying it.
Wait, what do you mean? How are they not doing it right?
Because if when you're doing the goalie chant, first of all, two things. First of all, you don't do it when the guy has a shutout going. Like it's a taunt when the guy has screwed up. So it's either he's getting shelled or he's given up a really terrible goal. That's when you break it out. But the other thing is it's a two syllable chant. You can't be chanting hella buck at somebody.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's gotta be two syllables and preferably the first name. That's it. If the first name's two syllables, you go with that. If it's the second, you've got to use the second name, that's fine. Like in the Boston series, they were chanting Anderson. It's like the dude's name is Freddie. Just Freddie. It works perfectly. It's the Daryl Strawberry chant. They didn't chant Strawberry, they chanted Daryl. Like it's more condescending to do the first name. And yeah, hockey fans are screwing it up everywhere.
I don't know if I agree with the first name though, because Hextall is the most popular one.
Hextall, because his name was Ron Hextall, right? Like Ronnie or Ronald. That's fine. Like first name, if it's two syllables, if not, second name is fine. Like
I never thought
like with Belfour, it was Eddie, right? You drop the Eddie on him, you know, not Belfour. And then years later, fans would hit him with Belfour, and you were like, no, that's not even, it's the same guy.
But it was Ruah for Patrick Waugh. They would go, Ruah.
Yeah. But that was more like just kind of making fun of his name sort of thing. That was like this guy's got a weird French name. So
you would go Fleury, something weird. Would you go Subban or Malcolm?
I go Malcolm. Especially since here. Yeah. Especially since he's got, there's more famous Subban in the league. But I think either one of those work.
Okay.
But
that's interesting.
And certain, you know what? And people are like, yeah, but what if neither name is two? So then you can't do it. Sorry. Craig Anderson, you find a different chant. You can't drop a Craigie on him or anything like that. Like, if you want, I had people trying to push that you could do Johnny for Jonathan Quick. And I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe. But, at some point, man, you gotta pick another. Got to pick another chant. I think they should just pick some random like fourth liner and start doing that chant on him.
Well, they were chanting in Winnipeg. They were saying, we want Subban, which was weird. Yeah. Like, but don't you want to just continue to score goals on the bad goalie that's let up all the goals? Why do you want Subban? He's probably going to come in and make more saves than Fleury. That doesn't make any sense. I don't understand.
Winnipeg, I think they were showing their respect to PK Subban. That must have been it.
These new hockey markets like Vegas and Winnipeg, they just don't understand the game like Toronto and Ottawa.
They don't have
here. Yeah.
This intricate understanding of the game. Speaking of which, kind of goaltending and also Subban, which takes us to Nashville, when we did our last show, we were still headed towards Game 7 in the Winnipeg-Nashville series. We get Game 7. Pekka Rinne kind of has a terrible game, so I feel like you need to remind everyone because you actually called it.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, we talked about the exact scenario that ended up playing out, so I feel like you need, even though you've lost some of your luster for abandoning the Caps, I feel like you need a quick victory lap here.
Yeah, so, like, I have this, it's, like, I get it. Goalies don't get pulled until they give up three most times. And when they're two extremely bad ones in 2 minutes, like Rene gives up, they pull him then. But I just think there are certain points. Like, you don't do this You don't do this every single time it happens. But, like, all throughout the second round, Pekka Rinne was either lights out or, like, a dude who just bought skates for the first time. And he was terrible. And you could always spot it. And now it's Game 7, it's Winnipeg, you can't fall behind by a lot. And the first goal was just the most tragically bad goal you've ever seen. And you have to know at that moment, we can't use Pekka Rinne tonight. We have UC Saros, he's at like 925 or whatever it is. He's a perfectly good backup. You have the replacement guy who can come in and do the job. It's not as though you have like 45-year-old Chris Mason backing up and you can't put him in. You got to go at Rinne. Rinne is giving you all the signs for six games. When he doesn't have it, he really doesn't have it. And he gave you the sign. He gave it to you right away. He said, oh, Tyler Myers, hey, just put one right under my leg there. It's fine. You had to pull him there. You had to do it. And Peter Laviolette waited for the second bad goal, which was just as bad. I still don't know. On the first goal, I can kind of get it. Like, maybe your leg isn't pressed down the way it should be and you thought it was. The second goal, it was like he lost track of the puck. He was like a dog where you fake the tennis ball and he kind of moved out of the way and then, like, he just chipped it past him. And by then, it's too late. And maybe it wouldn't matter because they only scored one goal. But the second that goal went in, man, like, you need to – there's such rare occasions. The thing I wrote pointed out the time when – Ken Hitchcock left in Jake Allen after a terrible goal in Game 6 against Minnesota in 2015. And it was the same sort of thing all throughout that series. Jake Allen was just shaky as can be, and whenever he gave up a bad goal, it was over. And they had Brian Elliott on the bench, who, again, is Brian Elliott, but he's kind of at the same level as Jake Allen. So make the move right away. And then in the second period, Brian Engblom's interviewing Ken Hitchcock on the bench going, hey, it was still 1-0 at this point. He goes, hey, did you think about taking out Jake Allen? He's like, absolutely not. He's a young guy. We got to stick with him. And then 30 seconds later, it was, who scored the goal for the Blues? Someone scored a goal for the Blues on this horrible wrist shot that went through his legs, and he instantly puts in Brian Elliott. It's like, buddy, if the leash was that short, you should have just taken him out after the first goal. And coaches just... they don't do that.
You're right. They never do. I guess my one thing is, if you pull Rene after one goal, let's say you come back and win that game, like, you still got two rounds to go. Your team built to win the Stanley Cup.
Worry about it later. You have to.
Yeah.
You know, you can't worry about it. That's the thing, is it's a whole ego thing where...
it's one of these things where it's like, you're probably right, and yet the fact that nobody does it...
yeah, someone's got to be the first to do it.
Like, somebody, it's like, you know, being the first guy who's like, we're going to go for it on fourth down in our own 30-yard line.
It because, is like that, right? You know, it's like, and then, in the Super Bowl, Doug Peterson went for it on fourth and whatever on, like, his side of midfield, and it won them the game. And people are like, yeah, that's what he should have done. That's a little more clear cut. That's more like mathematical and stuff like that. Like, here's more of kind of a feel thing. You don't do this every single time, of course. You have to have the right kind of backup, the right kind of starter. And Peter Laviolette could do it. If he does it and it doesn't work out, he's not getting fired after the year. It was the perfect time to do it. And who knows? Who knows what could have happened if UC Saros comes in? And he played well. He finally got beat like 30 minutes later by a Mark Scheifele rocket off a one-timer. And,
well, here's the weird thing is, like, that's now... our last image that we saw of Pecorine this season is him giving up two terrible goals and getting pulled and sitting in the hallway looking like he was trying not to cry. And the next image we see of him is going to be next month when he's in Vegas accepting the Vezina trophy, which we all assume he's going to win.
That's right.
Which is, but it's like, there's now, it almost not quite overnight, because he did, you know, he had a couple of the rough patches in the series, but it's like we went from Pecorine is the best goalie in the league this year at least to Pecorine is a bum and you can't win with this guy. I don't know, like, what do you do if you're Nashville? You come back. Like, it sounds ludicrous to say, like, do you need to upgrade goaltending when your guy literally won the Vezina trophy? But do you? I mean, are you concerned? Or is this one of these things where you go, this guy's played hundreds of games, we know what he is, the fact that he had a bad game in Game 7 was terrible timing, but it doesn't tell us anything about him as a goaltender.
Yeah, but he had more than the one bad game. Like, that's kind of his MO, is he can be lights out for weeks and then crap his pants for a week.
Right.
And if you crap your pants for a week...
But, isn't every goalie like that? I mean, every goalie has a stretch of five games where they're not very good in three of them.
Well, I mean, Fleury...
the fact that it happens in a playoff series...
Fleury, Hellebuck haven't been like that. Vasilevsky's been pretty good.
Well, Fleury, before last night, Fleury given up three goals or more in five out of six games. I mean, you know, that's not the same, but it's, you know, he wasn't lights out during that stretch. It just happened that, you know, for the most part, the Knights still won.
In the playoffs this year, there's no way he's done that. His save percentage was like 955.
Five out of six games. Go back. He had three or four goals in five out of six games. I think the last three against San Jose, and it might have been four out of five. But yeah, he had the shutout in the clinching game mixed in there. So
that's probably what it is. Because LA only scored three goals the whole series, so then it's six against.
It wasn't LA. It was San Jose. But he was getting, you know, again, he's not getting lit up, and he wasn't getting beaten on terrible goals like Pecorine was. Right. But even there, like, Hellebuck got pulled from one game in the playoffs. Like, I don't know. I just it's one of those things where it almost, like, I believe that if a guy's played 500 games, look at the 500 games, not the handful of playoff games. But it almost becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if everyone's going to say that now Pecorine is the guy who can't win the big one, I don't know. I mean, part of being a goalie is needing to know that if you give up that first bad goal, you're not going to have everyone in the building looking at you thinking that you don't have it that night. So I don't know. And this gets to the other subject that I guess that I wanted to mention is when, as this game was going down, I sent out a tweet that I thought was an original idea, which I've come to find out was I subconsciously stole from you.
Plagiarizer. How dare you?
I plagiarized from, which means if anyone's mad at me for saying this, you should actually be mad at Dave.
Actually, when I saw your tweet, I thought you were mocking me. I was like, what the hell, yeah. Man? What?
No, I wasn't. I just threw out just, and you know, this wasn't a, this isn't me saying this is going to happen. This was just kind of like, I like talking, you know, throwing names out there and pretending we live in a league where people make trades and take risks and that sort of thing. And I said, okay, Pekka Rinne for Henrik Lundqvist, which team says no to that trade today? Which apparently, as I've come to find out, is a suggestion you made months ago.
Well, I just figured, this is pre-Vezina too, I just thought you want a guy in the playoffs, because Lundqvist, when the Rangers have lost, he really hasn't, I mean, he wasn't great in the last time they were in the playoffs when they lost to Pittsburgh, but I mean, that team was terrible. But for the most part, like when you go back to the year they lost to the Kings in the final, like it wasn't him. Like the Rangers just couldn't do anything against
him. And he has an excellent record. And again, this kind of gets back to the point we were just talking about. He has a fantastic record in game sevens. So if you believe that, that this, you know, game, high pressure, high leverage situations really are different and goalies do perform differently, then Lundqvist's your guy because he's got a fantastic record. What was interesting to me is I threw it out there and I got kind of the typical response is that if you propose any sort of trade, fans of both teams don't want to make the trade because they think their guy's better. That's just, you know, that's basic human psychology. If I have something and you have something, I think my thing is better even if it's not. You know, you kind of start from that point, which is part of why it's hard to come up with scenarios where people are making trades that make sense, especially if it's not like a future for veteran kind of deal. But what happened was like hours later, like the next day, I suddenly started getting this barrage of anger from Ranger fans. So clearly it got posted somewhere. I don't know if it was on a blog or someone put it on Reddit or whatever. And people got really riled up. And Ranger fans were just like furious at the suggestion.
Hey, forget about it there, Shawnee. We're not trading Hanky. You
know, oh yeah, I'm like, you know, who says no? And I like, you know, people with a brain say no. And it's like, okay.
People with a brain. Yeah,
here's the thing. Here would be my answer to those people. Look, I get if your viewpoint is, hey, I'm a Rangers fan, Henrik Lundqvist is my favorite player, I don't want to see him get traded. Cool. I totally get it. That's completely valid. If your feeling is, you know, hey, this guy's been the franchise, he's been around forever, he means more to this team than he's going to mean somewhere else, and, you know, plus, obviously, he's got the no trade and all this other stuff that adds up to this never happening, fine. I get that, too. But if you're a Rangers fan, if you're a fan of a team that just missed the playoffs, they say they're rebuilding, you've got a 36-year-old signed for 3 more years at the second highest cap hit in the entire league at his position.
Yep.
And if you think the idea of trading that guy for somebody who is slightly younger, cheaper, on a better contract because it expires next year.
Right.
And, oh yeah, is about to win the Vezina as the very best goaltender in the league. If you think the idea of making that trade is not just not a good idea, but is so out there that you're like offended by the concept, you've lost the plot as far as valuing players, because most times if you say, hey, would you like a younger, cheaper guy who just won the award for being the best at this position? Yeah, most people don't get angry at that idea.
People love Hank, man. Hank is a Ranger icon. That's the problem. It's weird too, because like,
but the other thing was, you know, I had a lot of people say, well, they asked him in the season if he wanted to be traded and he said no. But there's a difference between saying, do you want us to explore a trade, and saying, do you want to go to this team, which is the best team in the league, just won the President's Trophy, and probably will go into next year as one of, if not the Stanley Cup favorites. Like, that's a different conversation. And from a Predators standpoint, obviously you're taking on a much worse contract, much higher risk, but you're getting a guy that I do think is, like, I think Lundqvist is a better goalie than Rene today and has a better playoff track record. So it's kind of, if you're all in to win a cup anyways, you worry, you know, the Rangers need to be worried about $8.5 million in 3 years. Maybe the Predators say, we're all in today, we're going to worry about tomorrow.
And maybe the Rangers withhold enough salary where it balances out, where it's not really going to cost you more money. Your window is going to be open beyond this year. So what's your plan beyond this year? Are you going to re-sign Pekka Rene and have him do this again for two more years beyond this year? Or do you want to, I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense. But
I had Rangers fans who were like, we want a goalie who's good in game seven. Thank you. And it's like, you missed the playoffs this year. And you're rebuilding. Like, are you got a lot of game sevens on this? You watch. The Rangers are going to play four game sevens next year.
And I'm going to get, like, remember that podcast, Sean?
What was that about game sevens? I didn't quite hear you.
You want to do some of the reader mail? Want to do the reader, the readers? Let's see. Here's a Hurricanes question. I can't believe how much time I have dedicated thinking about the Carolina Hurricanes during the postseason this year. It's ridiculous. But this is an interesting question. He says, Clayton Anderson says he's hearing, I don't know if he has sources, but he's hearing that the total salaries for the Hurricanes GM, AGM, and coach are less than $1 million. So his question is, how can a management group command respect from a team of multimillionaires when combined they make the same money as Zach Rinaldo? It is an interesting question. Well, it reminds me of Seinfeld when Costanza got his secretary a raise and she made more than him and it threw off the whole power balance. Like, yeah, like how do you... Like, why would you ever, you know, respect somebody that who's there who doesn't maybe?
I guess my only answer on that is it's this dynamic is probably in play just about everywhere. Carolina may in fact be an extreme example. I know there are other franchises around the league that are rumored to pay very, very low compared to what other teams do. But, I mean, ultimately, if you're a star player in the NHL, unless your coach is like Mike Babcock, where he's got 5 years at $6-plus million left, you're dealing with somebody who has far less, you know, not just makes far less, but has far less job security than you do. And I think players these days know that, generally speaking, especially if you're a star, if it comes down to you or him, they're gonna keep you, and it's going to be the coach who goes. So... I mean, maybe it shouldn't be that way. I'm sure there's some old timer who can tell me about how in the '60s it was better when the players all knew they would be, you know, doing hot tar roofing if they talk back. But yeah, I don't think that's going to be the issue in Carolina. I think there are many, many more things to probably be scratching your head about. Specifically, the fact that you've got this owner who comes in. He's going to be the big disruptor. He's going to be hands-on. He's going to come up with a new way of doing things. And within weeks, he's spouting the exact same platitudes about heart and compete level. And you just got to want it more. Like, just the roster's fine. Just want it. Guys, can you just want a little bit more, please?
You know, if you want to pay back this predatory loan, you just have to want to do it. That's what you have to do. You have to really want to do it. One last thing we haven't touched on. Corey King asked this question that's kind of weirdly phrased, so I'm just going to pretend Corey's question is, hey, Sean and Dave, what do you think about gambling becoming legal across the United States? What's that going to mean for hockey? I don't really know. I feel like people are kind of overblowing it because everybody's gambling anyway. They're just doing it offshore. Yeah. With like
what's going to happen is you're going to be able to do it in the arenas at some point.
Someday, I don't know. You think so?
Years from now. I mean, it's not going to be soon, but you'll be, you know, when you line up to get your beer and your hot dog, you'll also be able to throw down a wager on whatever it is. And the other thing, and I got my fingers crossed, is hopefully widespread betting on the NHL. If it were to happen, because we don't even know there's, you know, certainly in the U.S., I don't know there's enough interest, but that could spell the end of this stupid upper body, lower body injury thing, because that's the only reason the NFL doesn't give us injury information out of the goodness of their hearts. They do it because of gambling and because you don't want people having inside information about the severity of injuries. Maybe, fingers crossed, this means that the NHL doesn't do this stupid thing anymore.
I feel like they won't. I don't think the issue is what the injury is. I just need to know if the guy's going to play or not. You know, it's not really if it's his knee or his dick. I don't think anyone really cares. They just want to know if he's going to play. So I don't know if that'll. It's a good point, though. Maybe it might. I don't know. But I don't know. People are like, oh, man, this is going to change the landscape of this. And now there's going to be more analytics and blah. I don't know, man. Like, I don't think people are going to start doing more research on how to win a bet now that it's legal. If they were betting anyway.
If anything, more of the analytics people will get snapped up by the bookies and have their information.
Trying to explain to people why every over-under is 5. Why is every over-under 5? Well, here's the thing about hockey. It's extremely boring and predictable, and everyone pretty much races to 3. So if you get to 3, you're probably going to win 3-2, and that's 5, and then you got to get an empty netter. That's pretty much how it works. That's all the time we have. I feel like it's flown by. We laughed, we cried, we touched on stuff, hockey stuff, not our stuff. Not me anyway. I don't know what Sean's doing up there, but, that's all I got. Read our stuff, 5-star our stuff, share our stuff. And we gotta get Kyle Dubas on. I know Kyle Dubas is a listener, and now that he's the GM, I feel like he can come on and refute all the statements from Nick Kyprios about how Kyle Dubas is too afraid to kill a spider on his own, so he needs Brendan Shanahan in the room to do it. And I feel like he needs to defend himself.
And speaking of Kyle Dubas, I've got my post on Sportsnet going up today. I have ranked all of the previous Maple Leaf GMs. 100 years worth of Maple Leaf general managers. Ranked from worst to best, it was one of the most depressing things I've ever written. I had to I wrote it, I hit send, and I just stared off into the darkness for like an hour.
Coming up, and also I have something similar. I will be ranking how every death in my family has affected me from least to most, just to kind of stay with the theme. All right, everybody, we'll be back next week at maybe the same time. It kind of really depends on when the conference finals end, because we want to, you know, recap and then look forward to the final and game sevens or Wednesday and Thursday.
Game sevens.
They might not even play them, so. We'll keep you posted, and we'll be back then. So thanks for the stopping by and enjoying the colon and the podcast and the hockey and the biscuits.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.